Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the Bible study at Community of Grace in the book of Ruth. Let me open us up in prayer and we'll get into our story here. So, Father, we thank you for our time. We thank you for this rich story of the book of Ruth, God. And we just thank you for all the lessons that are in it. I just pray that as we discuss things, Father, that this story would speak to our hearts and minds, God. That you would just open our minds and our hearts to what you're saying to each of us through it. Got our conversations, and we just pray all this in Jesus' name. Amen. So, last week we looked at Naomi and Ruth returning to Bethlehem in Judah at the time of the barley harvest. And Ruth goes out to glean, which is gathering up what is not picked up by the reapers who work the field for their master and their employer. And it was a biblical mandate to property owners to leave areas of their fields untouched or pass over areas not too carefully, so as to leave something for those who were poor or in need to be able to come through after the reapers and gather what they could find for their own needs. And these people who do this are called gleaners. So this was a kindness, and as I said, it was a mandate that goes back to Leviticus and Deuteronomy and is a remembrance to those in need, as the Hebrews were once also a wandering people, who were without a home for a time until they came to their new home in the Promised Land, which is where the story takes place. The unusual thing about what we covered last week in chapter 2 of Ruth is that as we are introduced to Boaz, who is a field owner, is that he extends this unusual kindness to Ruth, much more than was usually extended to gleaners. She's invited by Boaz to glean exclusively in his field. She is given access to water that the reapers and Boaz's servants had, and this would enable her to glean more as she would not have to go find her own water or carry some along. She's even invited to eat with them, with the workers of Boaz's field, again, something uncommon for a gleaner. And she is invited to even glean among the sheaves or the stalks that had been gathered and bundled up. And it was forbidden for gleaners to glean among these, but Ruth is given permission. And the workers are even told to put grain out from the sheaves for her to glean from.
So it's going to be a lot easier to work for her then.
Yeah.
She doesn't have to. She's not actually having to pick it up because it's right there.
Right. Everyone is told to leave Ruth alone. No one is to touch her or hassle her. She can glean in Boaz's field in safety and in confidence. And so we see this extraordinary kindness extended to Ruth from Boaz. And what we came to see with this was that Boaz had heard of Ruth's connection to Naomi, you know, both Boaz and Naomi being of the same clan. There is, to some degree, an acquaintance and association there. He had heard not only of Ruth's commitment to Naomi, but also Ruth's commitment to Naomi's people and to Naomi's God. So Ruth is a Moabite, and so she is renouncing her old way of life and basically saying, I commit to Naomi's people and to Naomi's God. Naomi's land is now my land, and I will die here now. I will die here now, rather than in my own home, because this is now her home now, you know, as a Jew, and that these are now her people, not the Moabites, not the Gentiles anymore. And Boaz hears of this, and he helps Ruth with her needs, and helping Ruth also helps her to provide not just for herself, but also for Naomi. But as Boaz does this, he also encounters Ruth's gratitude. He experiences her humility. Ruth was an uncommon woman. But as we are seeing, Boaz is also an uncommon man. To take notice and extend such unusual kindness, you know, as we're sure that he didn't just do this with all the other gleaners of the field. And so we see these two people of character taking notice of one another and responding in character to one another. It was also pointed out in our previous discussions that there is some divine intervention that is going on here between Ruth and Boaz, but there's also probably some degree of attraction going on as well, even though there is some degree of age difference here. So by the end of the passage that we looked at last week, Ruth has gathered 55 to 60 pounds of barley to take home to Naomi. And with all of this, we see God's loving kindness demonstrated in both Ruth and Boaz, as Boaz, who is a Jew, extends loving kindness to Ruth, a Moabite, And Ruth, who has left her Moab way of life to embrace the people and the God of Naomi, is extended loving kindness to Naomi in doing all this to take care of her. And this brings us to where we left off last week. Ruth chapter. And?
He calls her daughter.
I'm going to get to that.
Okay.
I'm going to get to that. So this brings us to where we left off last week. Pat, would you read verses 17 and 18 in Ruth chapter 2?
So she gleaned in the field until evening. Then she beat out what she had gleaned, and it was about an ephah of barley. She took it up, went into the city, and her mother-in-law saw what she had gleaned. She also took it out and gave Naomi what she had left after she was satisfied.
So Ruth brings it home. She gives it to Naomi. And Naomi's response is this in verse 19. Her mother-in-law then said to her, "Where did you glean today, and where did you work? May he who took notice of you be blessed." So Naomi didn't know whose field she'd been working. Ruth had, but she sees all that Ruth has brought in. So continuing that in that verse 19, it says, So she told her mother-in-law with whom she had worked and said, "The name of the man with whom I work today is Boaz." And Naomi's response was in verse 20 of chapter 2, Naomi said to her daughter-in-law, "May he be blessed of the Lord, who has not withdrawn his kindness to the living and the dead." Again, Naomi said to her, "The man is our relative. He's one of our closest relatives." Then Ruth, the Moabitess, said, "Furthermore, he said to me, 'You shall stay close to my servant until they have finished all my harvest.'" And Naomi said to Ruth, her daughter-in-law, "It is good, my daughter, that you go out with his maids so that others don't fall upon you in another field." So Ruth relates to Naomi, you know, at least some of her experiences in Boaz's field. And Naomi tells her that this is good, you know, if for no other reason than she will be able to glean in safety. Because for women gleaning, you know, it may not always be safe. So going on to verse 23 of Ruth chapter 2, it says, "And so she stayed close by the maids of Boaz in order to glean until the end of the barley harvest and the wheat harvest. And she lived with her mother-in-law." So the maids of Boaz are servants, and the workers of Boaz were also Ruth's protection. Now the wheat harvest followed the barley harvest. So Ruth worked these fields for Boaz for at least 3 months more or less, which was the time from the beginning of the barley harvest to the end of the wheat harvest. And during this time, she continued to live with Naomi and provide for her. So, Pat, would you read verses 1 through 5 of chapter 3 of Ruth?
Then Naomi, her mother-in-law, said to her, "My daughter, shall I not seek security for you, that it may be well with you? Now is not Boaz our kinsman with whose maids you were? Behold, he winnows barley at the threshing floor tonight. Wash yourself, therefore, anoint yourself, and put on your best clothes. Go down to the threshing floor, but do not make yourself known to the man until he has finished eating and drinking. It shall be when he lies down that you shall notice the place where he lies. You shall go and uncover his feet and lie down. Then he will tell you what you shall do." She said to her, "All that you say, I will do."
Okay, so does Naomi seem to hear in verses 20 and 22 and the verses that Pat just read, 1 through 5 of chapter 3, does she seem to reflect the same attitude that she had in chapter 1 where she calls herself Mara, which means bitter? Does she seem to show that same attitude here?
No, she's come alive.
Really?
At the word Boaz.
Yeah. Yeah.
And even before that, she was blessing whoever it is.
Uh-huh.
And now she's blessing Boaz, who's acting for God. I mean, she's blessing God. And this is a new or returned Naomi.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah.
And in spite of the bitterness, she followed God, and God still blessed her.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't throw out because she was bitter.
Right. Yeah.
Well, she also, you know, on the first day that Ruth went out and gleaned, you know, Naomi, I think at that point, or Mara, whichever frame of mind she was in at that moment, was like, okay, see what you can get, because she probably knew that gleaners don't, they get enough to survive, not enough to bank. Mm-hmm. And then she came home on the first day with enough to bank, to survive and bank, and it's like, well, wait a minute. So yeah. She saw some physical redemption, I'm going to call it, and I think that helped change her attitude.
Okay. Now, you mentioned Boaz as being a factor. Could you kind of elaborate on that a little bit?
She doesn't seem to have thought about Boaz, but now all of a sudden, the favor Boaz is giving and the fact that he qualifies as a kinsman redeemer, mm-hmm, ties in her mind.
Mm-hmm.
And now she goes from hopeless to plotting.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, she is plotting here, isn't she?
Could it matchmaker?
Ah, yes. Well,
okay, but is it possible or plausible, whichever word you want to use, that when she came back, she knew she had kinsman redeemers? But would it have been her that would have been redeemed, not her daughter?
I'm going to get to that.
No, but that's what I'm wondering is, when she came back bitter, it's like, you know, who's going to want an old woman is past childbearing age?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm going to be a burden on any of my kinsmen redeemers. I'm just going to be a burden. She didn't think of the fact that her daughter-in-law...
Well, because she was a Moabite.
What is a kinsman redeemer?
I'm going to get to that.
Okay.
I'm going to get to that. Yeah. Yeah, so she kind of... Looks like she's kind of playing matchmaker here. Yeah. Yeah, uh-huh. So she came into Judah, shame, hopeless. I'm talking about Naomi here. God had visited her people and given them food, and so perhaps she thought, you know, maybe I can get some there. But she came back crushed and in despair. But now, with what's happening with Ruth, suddenly she sees a glimmer of hope, you know, light in the midst of the dark cloud of Mara, you know. And so, how has God brought you hope in a dark time?
Well, the first news I got after I was diagnosed with cancer was that my wife was pregnant.
Yeah.
So that was the first light at the end of my dark tunnel.
Mm. Okay. Anybody else?
Just basically hope and that peace that passes all understanding and resting in Him in the midst of circumstances that are challenging, that even though they may not have been resolved, they, even the Lord just knows I'm with you, just rest and He'll work things out. So, that's, yeah.
Okay. So then, once the wheat and barley harvest is over, Naomi also sees that something is going on with Ruth and Boaz. So now that the harvest is over, that means there's no more gleaning. And so something needs to happen here. And so Naomi says to Ruth, you know, we need to think about your future. You know, and this was Naomi's concern even back in chapter 1 when she tells the daughters to go back to Moab, you know, take care of yourself, you know, kind of a thing. So then...
And then the same words, too, even though it doesn't show up,
yeah,
in the translation.
Exactly, yeah.
Shall I not seek security for you, verse 1?
Exactly.
And that was back in chapter 1 when she was telling her daughters-in-law,
yeah,
go back home.
Yeah, orphan
Ruth.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think it said rest, but it's the same word, security, mm-hmm, for you. And here it is.
Here it is again.
Coming out again.
Here it is again. Yeah. Uh-huh. So Boaz is a relative or a kinsman. Now he's winnowing the barley at the threshing floor, and he's doing this tonight, she says. And this is logical, since we're at the end of the harvest here. So my next question is, what is winnowing or threshing?
Don't leave him, Paul, too far behind before you answer the question. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Oh, about the other one he asked?
Yeah.
I will. I'll get to it.
It's lifting up the grains of wheat with all the you know, extra
chaff
and stuff. Yeah, you know, the extra material, and you fluff it up and make sure there's wind flowing so that the wind can blow away the
what if you don't have enough wind?
Grain.
It's
well,
that,
maybe they had people with big fans.
No, not.
It's actually a two-part process. Threshing and winnowing is two different parts. The first one is they take the whole chaff and beat it on the ground to get the big stuff down. Then they come in with their baskets and fluff it up to get the air. And it's almost like panning for gold. You kind of wash off the light sand to leave the heavy stuff at the top. And it's the same thing, kind of the same thing with the grain. You want the good stuff.
Yeah. There's probably some difference depending on what you read from. Mm-hmm. But what happened was these shafts are pounded or they're rolled over to loosen the heads of grain from the stalks and the stems. So then with a pitchfork, they heave these stalks into the air. And there's a breeze, okay. And the thing about there's a reason why they did it at a certain time of day, okay. If you do it too early in the day, the winds are too strong, and it will blow the grain and the chaff away. The chaff is the husk around the kernel, okay. And so when they would heave the stuff into the air, the wind would separate it, and the chaff would blow away, and the grain, which is heavier, would fall to the ground. If you did it too late in the evening, there's no wind. Everything will fall to the ground. There won't be any separation of chaff and grain. So you had to find just that right time of day where there's just the right amount of breeze to blow the chaff off and the grain falling to the ground. And this is what this process is. And so the threshing floor here, and we've heard that term threshing floor before. We heard it with Gideon. Mm-hmm. You know, it's basically, it's a patch of bare ground that's been packed down to a flat rock surface that they did this on. Again, it has to be outside because they need the wind, right? So Naomi knew that Boaz would be there at night or at dusk, because it's that time of year, you know. And again, it was warm, and there would be those warm winds, you know. And again, let me see. So Naomi says to Ruth, she says, wash yourself, anoint yourself. In other words, put on perfume, put your best clothes on. This was what we call courting. Go down there and look good and smell good and go on down there and get that man. You know? You didn't come back empty-handed with grain. Don't come back empty-handed without a man.
Some things don't change.
Some things don't change. Some things are timeless. So go down there. And so, yeah, as you said, she's matchmaking. But this would solve all the problems in one stroke. But she says, don't let him know that you're there until he has finished eating and drinking. And this is a respect to the man's work. He's working. You know, let him get his work done. Don't let him know you're there. But also follow him to see where he lies down so she can do what she's supposed to do. Wait until then uncover his feet, then lie down at his feet, and then he will then tell you what to do. So my question is this, does Ruth's actions here, that we're talking about here, does this seem too forward?
Mm-hmm. Kind of.
Why?
Well,
she's assuming that Boaz is only looking for a young mate.
Well, she's, yeah, perhaps, but she's trying to bring Ruth definitely, like, in his face, to his attention.
Yeah. Well, Boaz hasn't made a move. You know, he's shown her favor. Mm-hmm. He's taking care of her.
Mm-hmm.
But at this point, Naomi is wanting Ruth to be out there to let Boaz know she is available.
Okay,
this isn't 3 days from when she first gleaned.
Right.
This is three months.
That's true.
So there's been a lot of interaction. And the chance that Ruth and Naomi haven't talked about how handsome he is, you know, how good how much he's taking, you know, he's taking care of her and all this, because Boaz may not think that, you know, there's any difference. Ruth may not be interested in an old man. And he's, you know, he's waiting. You know, so, you know, he may not, you know, he's probably in his late 30s, early 40s. Because they talk about the, you know, but that in that time, back in that biblical time frame back then, the man to be 20, 30 years older than the woman wasn't unheard of, especially if she
really don't know the exact age difference here. Yeah.
But he's established because he has money, he has fertile fields, so he's, you know.
That can come young, depending on wars, family situations. Things just drop into you. So the fact that he's well-respected, well-to-do, may not mean he's old. Life is complicated.
Yes, yes. So she tells Ruth, Naomi tells Ruth, you know, do what he tells you. What are the risks of Ruth leaving herself open to that?
She can be put to the curb.
Rejection, yeah.
You know, woman, what are you doing here? I have no desire to be with you. Leave before you're found out and you have no chance for anybody else.
Then there's the other end of it.
Yes.
What would you think? The other end of it?
If she gets rejected?
No. If she doesn't get rejected,
he could take advantage of her forcefully.
Yes. Yes. Mm-hmm. Uh huh.
Or maybe would, well, if she was where he was at, though, was that some sort of protection from others trying to take advantage of her while she was so close to him? Was that some measure of protection?
And as to, is this unusual?
Yeah.
Probably even so at the time,
mm-hmm.
but this is not the time that we understand now.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. So, what are the benefits of Ruth marrying Boaz?
Security, and he's already shown his character that he's kind, that he's generous, that he, you know, showed her favor. So there was already at least that kind of interaction going on.
Mm-hmm.
Is Naomi gold digging?
Okay.
Well, he is a kinsman to a certain degree.
Yeah. Now, as has been said, you know, Boaz is older. But this was Naomi's hope of a plan working that would solve all the problems. This approach was to initiate and see if Boaz would be the husband, would be the redeemer. This had to be done in a way that was consistent with character, though, because you have two people of character here.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So the uncovering of the feet was a respectful way of waking this person up. You know, when you uncover someone's feet at night, their feet are now, they get cold and they wake up. Okay?
But also,
uncovering the feet, and then you don't read it in this one, but you read it in the passage we're going to look at. You know, she uncovers his feet and lies down at his feet.
Mm-hmm.
She's not lying down right up there with him, okay? She's lying down at his feet. And this is a symbol of service and servanthood. Anything more aggressive would be seen as seductive and inconsistent with the character of these people that we have been studying for the last couple of weeks. Ruth's response was, I will do as you say. She's not just being obedient and respectful. Again, she's a Moabite, or she's been a Moabite, so she doesn't know the customs. She needs to get Boaz's attention in the right way and then follow the lead, because she doesn't know what to do in this custom, in this culture. But the other thing is, too, is, you know, she kind of wants this, too, you know. It's not just Naomi wanting to see this happen. She wants to see this happen, too. So let's back up for a minute and let's talk about redemption. In Jewish thought, back in this time, God made a covenant with Abraham. God promised Abraham the promised land back in Genesis chapter 12. To them, in the minds of the God's people, God owned the land.
Mm.
Okay. Therefore, because God owned the land, Israel had the right to take the land because God had given it to Abraham. However, the Hebrew thinking was God still owned the land. He just gave Israel use of it. God still owned it. And so the division of the land was determined by Moses and Joshua, and then the tribes and the clans and the families. Therefore, the lands of the tribes and the clans and the families stayed within those tribes and clans and families. They couldn't sell it or dispose of it in any way. It stayed within those tribes and clans and families as tenants and users of God's land. However, if something happened to where someone had to sell land or dispose of land, that the land that they had, and they did sometimes, it was the duty of the nearest family relative to intercede and buy it back, or in other words, redeem it. So it stayed in the family, it stayed in the clan, and this is all based on Leviticus 25. Now the other thing is this. Going back to what we read in Ruth chapter 1, Elimelech, again, that's Naomi's dead husband, right? He died in Moab. You know, and then after marrying, Naomi's sons also died, Mahlon and Chilion. You know, and Mahlon, by the way, was the one who married Ruth. Now, since there is no husband or sons to pass Elimelech's property, there's no son to pass Elimelech's property onto. And because Naomi's sons had no children, which means there's no sons of those sons, Naomi is the property owner. But being property stricken, as she obviously is, she has obviously sold the land. She's unable to work it. She can't work the land herself. She's old. You know, she can't hire workers. If she could, she would have. You know, I mean, she's having to glean. You know, she's in a bad way. Now, by her own admission in chapter 1, she says she's too old.
Next week I'll get into it, but you said she sold the land. I don't think so.
Then why is she having it redeemed?
Because he has to buy. Boaz is buying the land.
I'm going to get to that.
See, I was reading it differently. That I read it that she didn't have the money to be able to take care of the land to farm it. So, you know, okay, she's just got this barren wheat field land.
Then it would still be her land.
Really, we don't know what Abimelech did when he left.
Because
he release property?
Yeah.
Yeah, did he lease it to somebody?
Was it Elimelech or Naomi who lost? Really, we don't have the details. This is probably the most likely, that she came back and wasn't able to work it.
Yeah. Now, because Boaz was kin or kinsmen, okay, he could buy back or redeem the land, and this was called the kinsman redeemer. Mm-hmm. Okay, so that answers your question. And so Naomi's thought and hope here was that since he's showing favor to Ruth, he would marry Ruth. You know, again, chapter 3, verse 1, then Naomi, her mother-in-law, said to her, "My daughter, shall I not seek security for you that it will be well with you?" So Boaz will marry Ruth and give her security and give her a good life in home with a husband, safety and shelter, as you guys said, which was right. The land would stay in the family and the family line would continue. And then Ruth would have children, hopefully sons. And with that, according to custom, the son born to Ruth and Boaz would be seen as the heir of Elimelech, as a grandson, which they were also seen as another son. Okay, this is how they saw that stuff. And carry on the clan and the family name of Mahlon, since he was Ruth's husband. And with this, we see an answer to a prayer of Naomi back in chapter 1, you know, where she says, "May the Lord grant that you may find rest each in the house of her husband." And so, but there's a problem. And we're going to see that problem in a minute, okay? So, going back to Ruth chapter 1, verse 8, "And Naomi said to her daughter-in-law, 'Go, return each of you to her mother's house. May the Lord deal kindly with you as you have dealt with the dead and with me. May the Lord grant that you may find rest each in the house of her husband.'" And so we see here, we see with all of this, we see the goodness of God. As we see God answering Naomi's prayer later which is what we're reading now. Okay, but this is better than she expected. In the case of Ruth, you know, with her daughter-in-law not having a Moabite husband in another land, but a Hebrew man of character and wealth in Bethlehem, this is even better, you know.
Back up a moment.
Yeah.
You were talking about the nature of the land and the redemption of the land.
Yeah.
We also have this issue of the brother or taking care of the...
I'm going to get to that.
Okay.
I'm going to get to that.
So it's like two different things.
Yeah, I'm going to get to that.
Merging.
Yes, exactly. That's part of the problem. Yeah. So, Anne, would you read Ruth chapter 3, verse 6 through 8? Ruth 3, 6 through 8.
Yeah.
What are you trying to find?
Yeah, 3, 1 through 9. Okay.
3, 6 through 8.
6 through 8.
Yeah.
There, yeah, it was like, okay. So she went down to the threshing floor and did according to all that her mother-in-law had commanded her. When Boaz had eaten and drunk and his heart was merry, he went to lie down. He went to lie down at the end of the heap of grain, and she came secretly and uncovered his feet and lay down. It happened in the middle of the night that the man was startled and bent forward, and behold, a woman was lying at his feet.
Mm-hmm. So the plan is working so far, okay? You know, she's lying, you know, she's doing as she was instructed, trusting Naomi, you know, has she not already given her life for Naomi, right? And so, now let me just say something here. Where it says that his heart was merry, Boaz's heart was merry, it doesn't mean he's like drunk, okay?
Yeah,
you know, he's had a few, he's feeling good, okay, but he's not drunk, okay? And so he's lying down at the end of a heap of grain, and that may be to protect the grain.
Okay. He's fat and happy.
He's a fat man.
But if he's there, he wakes up, you know, somebody's not coming in and stealing the grain that he just worked so hard to do.
Right. Mm-hmm. So, now, this was interesting as I was researching this. There is apparently some crazy misinterpreting out there of the meaning of feet.
Yes, I've read some of that.
Yeah. I think it's a terrible misinterpretation. But some basically feel that interpret feet basically as meaning that when she uncovered his feet, that she was uncovering his private areas. Yeah, I know. It's just really...
I don't think so.
Yeah.
I think that would be rather forward.
Yes, it would. Yeah. And so for Naomi to instruct her to uncover his feet is basically when you go over there, just undress the guy. I mean, it just doesn't... It's not consistent with the character of these people, you know? But another interpretation of feet is feet means feet. Or it means legs, but it's not the inappropriate covering of the legs. In other words, it's the lower part of the legs, you know, which better fits the story and the character and everything else. So, Paul, would you read verse 9?
He said, "Who are you?" And she answered, "I am Ruth, your maid. So spread your covering over your maid, for you are a close relative."
Yeah. So Boaz was not expecting this, which you kind of guessed, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I don't think he was expecting this.
Your feet are everything.
You know, Ruth is,
You're not, you can't do anything without the use of your feet.
That's true. So now, Ruth is kind of bold here in that she is pursuing marriage. But we've seen this boldness in Ruth already, going out and gleaning and all this other kind of stuff. So this is kind of considerable. She's kind of a bold person, but not an inappropriate person. So she identifies herself, and the phrase "put your covering over your maid" is basically an offer to marry. Cover me cover me was basically saying, you know, protect me, and it symbolized, which is symbolized by her covering, her being covered with his whatever he's got, a blanket or garment or whatever. But also here, Ruth doesn't, here also with this, Ruth does not, if you notice, Ruth does not identify herself as a Moabitess. She did this prior to this. She's always labeled as Ruth the Moabitess.
Oh.
Right? But here she doesn't refer to herself as that. You know, she says, you're maid. And this refers to a lower class of Hebrew, but also someone who is legal to be married.
Ah, that's interesting.
Saying, cover over your maid, which can also be translated as wife as well. So again, there's this, you know, wanting to marry. She then points out to him that she's a relative of the same clan. So what she's saying here is that she is someone he can marry, but also that he is a kinsman redeemer, a close relative that we just talked about this. So, but there's a problem with this plan. Do you see what the problem is? I know you do.
Well, I know this story is there was another, I don't know if it was a cousin, brother of Boaz that was closer in kinship.
We're not quite there yet, but that is another problem. Yeah,
oh, okay.
Yeah, you got that one right. So here's the problem. According to Levitical law, Ruth marrying Boaz does not make any children that they have a continuation of the family line.
Because they
would not be seen as an heir of Elimelech because of that Levitical law, which only applies to brothers of the deceased.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mahlon's brother also died in Moab. Boaz is just a relation. You know, he's not a brother. But because of this situation that has come up, and apparently this is something that has come up through history since the giving of these laws in Mount Sinai, the law has been modified somewhere to where the marrying of a widow in this case was included with the duties of the kinsman redeemer, along with being able to buy back the land. So this modifying of laws was something that we have already seen this. We saw this with Benjamin, with the tribe of Benjamin in Judges. Hmm. You know, when they were looking for wives for Benjamin.
Uh-huh.
There was no laws for that. Somewhere they just modified the laws. You know, but the thing about this is, this does solve the problem because there would be other situations where you had widows with no brothers. And so this solves that problem. And somewhere along the line, they modified this and inserted this. You know, and so this had become a tradition. But keep in mind, this is not Levitical law. This is a tradition. It was okay. It was accepted. But it's not revered as holy. It's not revered as an ordained law of God. But it's okay.
It doesn't go against it. So.
Right. Right. It's been modified. Deuteronomy chapter 25, verse 5. When brothers live together and one of them dies and has no son, the wife of the deceased shall not be married outside the family to a strange man. Her husband's brother shall go into her and take her to himself as wife and perform the duties of a husband's brother to her. It shall be that the firstborn whom she bears shall assume the name of his dead brother, so that that name will not be blotted out of Israel.
Does it matter whether it's the older brother or younger brother that died?
My
initial thinking is they only care about the oldest son.
It's
that his line.
You have to keep in mind there's this order system. The oldest, then the second, then the third, then the fourth. There's a line that this goes down. Okay, and so you honor the oldest first, then the second, then the third, and the fourth, and so on. But if the man does not desire to take his brother's wife, then his brother's wife shall go up to the gate to the elders, and you're going to see more of this in the coming chapters. and say, my husband's brother refuses to establish a name for his brother in Israel. He is not willing to perform the duty of a husband's brother to me. Then the elders of his city shall summon him and speak to him. And if he persists and says, I don't desire to take her, then his brother's wife shall come to him in the sight of the elders and pull his... This is where it gets kind of interesting. But pull the sandal off his foot, spit in his face, and she shall declare, thus it is done to the man who does not build up his brother's house. In Israel, his name shall be called the house of him whose sandal is removed. So we see here that a change has been going on with Ruth. She leaves her former life as a Moabite with all that goes with that, and she follows Naomi, joins herself to Naomi's people in all respects. Now, she no longer identifies herself as who she was, as we saw in chapter 2. But now she's pursuing marriage with a Hebrew and identifies herself as one of them, humble but still one of them. And we see here that humble, grateful Ruth now is going after the wealthy and older landowner Boaz. You know, of course, Naomi's got something to do with this too, but still Ruth is changing and she's growing, and we see this transformation of Ruth as we go through this story. And as she's growing and doing this, she's maintaining her character. She's doing this in humility and in order. So going on to verse 10. Then he said, may you be blessed of the Lord, my daughter. You have shown your last kindness to be better than the first by not going after young men, whether poor or rich. So Boaz is flattered that this woman would take an interest in him as opposed to some younger man. You know, we wondered about the age difference. Here it is. Okay. Boaz's statement, daughter, is where we get to the part where you asked about. As we said before, it refers to her being younger. We also see Naomi say to her, my daughter also. Now, she's also mother-in-law, but still, it's a term for the older toward the younger.
That may be, but for him to call her daughter, is that you're not a Moabite, you're daughter of Israel.
That's a big deal. He's accepting. When we talked about this, he has accepted her as this. It's not, you're not that Moabite. You're one of us. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And then he mentions her first kindness. So what was that? Well, that was Ruth's commitment and care for Naomi. Ruth could have just gone after a younger man. She could have gone after any younger man and solved her own problem. But she sticks to Naomi, and she sticks to Naomi's plan and takes care of Naomi. As she does this, she's also working on her own situation too. Plus, there was also this attraction between Ruth and Boaz that we've talked about. These are both people of characters, and I said last week, character recognizes character, which I think also adds to the attraction. Mm-hmm. So then look at Boaz's response in verse 11. Now my daughter, do not fear. I will do for you whatever you ask, for all my people in the city know that you are a woman of excellence. So as we saw with the previous chapter, everyone knew about Ruth. You know, Boaz had heard about her. You know, that's why that's one reason why he was extending all that kindness to her. He had heard about her and a commitment that she made. She was an uncommon woman. Verse 12 and 13. Now it is true, I am a close relative. However, there is a relative closer than I. Remain this night, and when morning comes, if he will redeem you, good, let him redeem you. But if he does not wish to redeem you, then I will redeem you as the Lord lives, lie down until morning. So, we got a problem.
Yeah.
But when I got to that point, I said, aha, he has been thinking about this. He wasn't expecting somebody at his feet, but he's got his own.
His plan was meandering this way, trying to think, wait a minute, threshing's almost done, how am I going? His plan might have been like, how do I propose or how do I pursue Ruth after she's done with the field?
It might have been.
That might have been in his mind.
Might have been.
No.
But he has been thinking about this. But he already knows about who's closer.
But he didn't want to take up that route. And then I would think he doesn't want to go to the other kinsman closer and go, hey, you want to buy the land? And then find out that Ruth goes, I don't want to marry an old fart like you.
We apologize for Pat's use of the word fart on Facebook. So there's an even closer relative than Boaz, which makes him the kinsman redeemer, because there is this order, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, but Boaz is a godly man of character. So he's going to obey the law. Irregardless of whatever feelings he has for Ruth, he is going to obey the law, even if it means losing Ruth to another relative. This is a man of character. So he instructs Ruth to stay and leave in the morning, and he's going to call a meeting, and he's going to see if this closer relative will indeed redeem her. But if not, he says, then he will redeem her. So I'm going to stop there because we're out of time. And Pat, you can pick it up with 12 and 13 and go on from there. So let me close in prayer, and we will transition here into the next part of the morning. So, Father, we thank you for... We thank you for this story, God, and we just thank you for all that's in it, God. I just pray that you would just help us to just see the things that we need to see in our own lives. Father, I just thank you for these people of character. And I just pray, Lord, that it would be something that would just speak to all of us today, that we too would be people of character in all that we say and do. Just guide us in our time that's coming up, and we just thank you for this story. We just pray all this in Jesus' name. Amen.